Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carvel-Zimmer. It's my privilege to serve as the minister of this congregation. I'm joined in welcoming you this morning by Elaine Bowen, who is serving as our worship associate, and our music director, Hal Walker. We're glad to be together today, and I'd like to extend a special welcome to those of you who are with us for the first time. We're always happy to have guests at our services and hope that you'll join us afterwards for our social hour, which is held immediately following our service downstairs in our social hall, Fessenden Hall. If you find that you would like more information about the life and work of this congregation, I encourage you to complete a guest card, which you may find in the racks and the pews. You may place your completed card in the offering basket when it comes to you later in the service, or hand it to one of our greeters who'll be happy to meet you at the visitor's table, which is just around the corner outside the sanctuary doors. Ours is a church that strives to practice the fragile art of hospitality. And so in that spirit, I invite you to take a moment to turn and greet your neighbors. In addition to asking you to silence your cell phones, I'd like to direct your attention to the thread from the web. That's the insert in your order of service. There you will find several announcements as well as a calendar of events for the week ahead in the church. I'd like to bring to your attention the presentation this week by Lee Brooker. Lee Brooker went on a Unitarian Universalist College of Social Justice tour of historic civil rights locations this summer, and he'll be making a presentation about that trip this week, and everyone is warmly invited to participate. In addition, I'd like to let you know that despite our best efforts to eradicate it, we have located some poison ivy on the path to the play area behind the church, so we will continue to try to get rid of that, but in the meantime, please do be careful. Next week, you're again invited to join us for worship at 9:45 or 11:30 a.m. I will be leading the service. We'll be continuing our exploration of the theme we opened today with a focus on what mission might mean, missionalism might mean for Unitarian Universalists today. Bonnie Harper will be my worship associate, and the title of the sermon is The Inside Out Church. At the end of our service this morning, Elaine and I will be glad to greet you at the back of the sanctuary. And once again, I bid you welcome. You find them in churches when you're lucky, other places too. Long-haul people upon whose shoulders and pocketbooks and casseroles and daytime and nighttime hours a church is built and maintained. After the brass is tarnished and cushions need restitching, they play their pledges full and on time, even when the music's modern, support each canvas, even when the sermon is not short, mow lawns and come to suppers, teach Sunday school when there's no one else and they'll miss the service. Asked what they think of the minister or plans for the kitchen renovation or the choral anthem or the Christmas pageant or the color of the bathroom paint, they will reply. Individuals and fashions arrive and pass. The church, their church, will continue to be here, steady and hale for a long, long time. It will, for long-haul people, bless the church with a very special blessing. We light our chalice this morning in gratitude for all of the long-haul people who have tended this place, this blessing for us.
My head is in the sky, sky, sky. My feet are on the ground, ground, ground. And what about my blood? It's from the sea. And what about my bones like a mountain bee? And my hands, oh my hands, I believe with my hands I can hold this land. My two hands. rule the earth. My head is in the sky, sky, sky. My feet are on the ground, ground, ground. And what about my blood? It's from the sea. And what about my bones? Like a mountain bee. And my hands, oh my hands, I believe with my hands I can hold this land. My two hands hold the earth.
It is
in the sky, sky, sky. My feet are on the ground, ground, ground. And what about the blood? It's from the sea. And what about my bones? Like a mountain bee. And my hands, oh my hands, I believe with my hands I can hold this land. My two hands hold the earth. It's in the sky, sky, sky. My feet are on the ground, ground, ground. And what about my blood? It's from the sea. And what about my bones? Like a mountain bee. And my hands, oh my hands, I believe with my hands I can hold this land. My two hands hold the earth. My two hands hold the earth.
Born into an Irish-German Catholic family in southeastern Massachusetts, I began my questioning at age 7. Decided in my early teens I was an atheist, was militantly atheist through my late teens and 20s. My early to mid-30s were a period of apathetic agnosticism. My late 30s, however, were a turning point, a recognition and acknowledgement that something was missing in my life. I thought it might be spirituality, but I wasn't sure what that meant, what it was, or how it might feel. I know what I was not looking for, and that was religion. My questioning path, my journey, led here. Over time, 13 years, I've explored, grown, and lived into our principles of a responsible search for truth and meaning, as well as nurturing my own spiritual growth. Without intention, I have found religion, my faith, and my soul. This is not a final destination on my journey, but a path I continue to walk, learn, and grow along with you. By the grace of the Spirit of Life, I call myself a devout and faithful Unitarian Universalist. But what does that mean? To me, it means, in part, my spiritual and religious identity. It means I know what I believe and why I believe it. But more than what it means, it's how it makes me feel. Proud. At peace. Connected to all that is within, around, and beyond me, whole and holy. Come, let us worship together.
Words to lead us into a time of silence, meditation, and prayer from the Unitarian Universalist minister, Burton Carley. I wonder if the river ever despairs of its downward destiny and harbors a secret desire to flow uphill. I wonder if winter yearns to be summer or a flower wishes it could bloom out of season. I wonder if silence would like to shout or if the sky would like to fall down and become the earth. I wonder if mountains envy the valleys or if snow secretly covets the warmth of June. I wonder if the moon complains that it's not the sun, or if the stars envy the earth. I wonder if rain prefers a cloudless sky, or if grass ever tires of green and hopes for blue. I wonder if spring really likes growing, or if fall rages against its colorful dying. I wonder if the world ever sighs after more than it is, like you and me. Like you and me. Oh, spirit of life, we struggle against our limitations. Teach us to accept them. We'll keep stillness for a moment together. Each time we gather for worship, we set aside time to widen the caring ministry of this congregation. We take time to memorialize those who have died, to celebrate with those who are joyous, and to call into this community of care those who need our love and support. We celebrate this morning with Anne Waters. Her son, George Waters, was wed yesterday to his beloved Kitty Huffman. And will you hold in your hearts and in your prayers Esther Duncan, a member of our congregation who has had a stroke. She is in the intensive care step-down unit, Akron City Hospital. And will you also keep in your hearts and in your prayers another member of the congregation, Caroline Arnold, who has not awoken since last weekend and is very near death. She continues to receive hospice care. Both Caroline and Esther have been long-haul people for this church, so we hold them in our hearts. Spirit of life and of love, spirit of mystery and wonder, it's so hard to accept our limitations, especially when bodies fail and lives are broken. It's hard to accept our limitations. Hard to accept them when the way is lost and we struggle to carve a path. Hard to accept them when the world feels chaotic, frightening, and dangerous. We worry. We're fearful about the exploding bombs, the lost lives, the wars raging now, the children who have lost so much, most especially their innocence and their childhoods. We struggle against our limitations, wish there was something we could do. Is there nothing we can do? Maybe this prayer, holding in our hearts and in our minds our wishes for a more peaceful world. And maybe also this, breathing in peace, breathing out love, becoming the prayer with our breath, breathing in peace, breathing out love. We can't stop death single-handedly. We can't stop the wars. But we can be the prayers of peace. We can be the prayers of love. And we can take that spirit and energy with us so that it might touch the lives of all whom we encounter. Amen, and blessed be.
Love is so gracious. Love is so giving. So infinite. Oh, love, show me the way. Show me the way. And I will follow. I will follow. Oh, love, show me the way. Show me the way. and I will follow. Show me the way. Oh, love, show me the way. Show me the way. Show me the way. And I will follow. Oh, love, show me the way, and I will follow. Show me the way, and I will follow.
An excerpt from Down the Mountain by Jen Crow. In so much of the writing and thinking out there about spirituality, the spiritual path is understood to be solitary. While we may gather in groups for instruction and encouragement, ultimately the path must be walked alone. From ancient times to the present day, we see it. The holy ones lock themselves away in monasteries or travel alone on long journeys. They meditate for days, submerge themselves in study, go off on a solitary odyssey, or sit quietly in prayer. Some sit under the Bodhi tree, while others wander in the desert. And so often, whatever shape the Holy One's spiritual journey takes, it takes them there alone. In a culture that encourages us to spend more and more time alone, the lure of the solitary spiritual journey can be strong. In their book, The Lonely American, psychiatrists Jacqueline Olds and Richard Schwartz describe a simultaneous push and pull that seems to be driving Americans further apart from one another. The push, they say, is the increasing franticness of daily life, which makes one want to step back whenever possible to reduce the deafening background noise. The pull is the American idea of the self-reliant loner hero who can make stepping back feel like a badge of superiority. In this culture, it makes sense that we have moved toward an individualized idea of spirituality. Please rise in body or in spirit for our hymn of affirmation after part one of the sermon. Whoops.
So, a sermon, as I understand it, is an ongoing conversation with the congregation. And a lot of times the conversation is happening sort of week by week. We talk about things in meetings and when we're here for social events, and then I sort of respond to that through the sermon. But sometimes I'm not sure about your part of the conversation. I'm not sure what you think. And this is one of those times. I'm curious to know, what do you think about this phrase, spiritual but not religious? If you've heard that, or if you use that to describe yourself, what do you think that means when people say they're spiritual but not religious, if you're willing to share?
I think a lot of people associate religion with like a set of specific rules, a lot of rituals, and they tend to look at their views of religion or the world maybe as more of an individual thing and more of what they do. And so when they look at religion, it's community, it's rules, it's very much maybe a lot of things that people are afraid of with embracing that side of themselves. So I've heard it a lot.
Melissa, I'm sure you remember the first time we met. I told you I wasn't a religious person, and you very quickly pointed out that I go to church every Sunday, and that this community is very important to me, and I might have to reconsider that statement to basically redefine what religious meant. So,
thanks. I think the question's very vague. Sorry, because there are so many religions, and just like it's sort of like asking what school versus homeschooling. I guess it depends what school you're talking about. So, the public or the private or the Waldorf or the this or the that. And so each one has a different philosophy and a different approach to controlling their people. Sorry. So spiritual to me is something that's more personal. That's your relationship with the world in your own relationship with your own higher power, whoever that may be.
Thank you. Last comment. To me, spiritual means that you believe in a higher power that guides the world and the environment, whereas religion I see as being very structured and that there's a specified dogma that you follow if you're a member of that religious persuasion. So there's a clear distinction between the two.
Thank you. So I know one Unitarian Universalist who says that he's religious but not spiritual. An atheist, very devout and faithful member of a Unitarian Universalist congregation. And I know a few Unitarian Universalists who say that they're spiritual but not religious. And when they say that, like I said to Saul, I wonder about, does this not count as a religion? I think to some people it doesn't, because the idea of religion is often associated with the things that you've said, with institutions, with denominations, with dogma, with doctrine, with particular rituals, with worship services, with clergy. And we certainly have some of that, but we don't have the dogma and the doctrine part. And so I think that some people sometimes think that, well, this doesn't exactly count as a religion because it doesn't have those elements of how we understand religion. And then spirituality, that word, you know, that's notoriously difficult to define, and I appreciate your efforts at doing that. It is so personal, and if I asked you to write your definition of spirituality today, there'd be a lot of different definitions, because for some people, spirituality has to do with their own experience of divinity, and for other people, it has to do with their experience of community, and there's a lot of other manifestations of the way we understand what does it mean to be spiritual. It can mean committing to a spiritual practice, like meditation or yoga or prayer. It can mean practicing various forms of divination, like reading tarot cards or the I Ching or studying astrology. Spirituality for some people can mean connecting to divinity through things like sweat lodges or communing with nature. Spirituality can also mean advocating for social justice or study. Most of the people who call themselves spiritual but not religious say that they believe in God. And I know this because there's been a lot of study about what people mean when they say spiritual but not religious. It's kind of a recent phrase that's become really common in the population, and the Pew Research Center has done this extensive study to see what is that all about. The study was framed around exploring who the nuns are. People who, when asked what their religious affiliation is, answer none. And what the Pew Research Center folks have found is that there are at least three distinct groups who say that they have no religious affiliation. A very small percentage, like 6% of the people, say that they're either atheist or agnostic. The vast majority of them say that they're unaffiliated. And of those unaffiliated, fully a third of them say that they're spiritual but not religious. That currently describes a fifth of the people in the United States and a third of all the adults under age 30. So what does that phrase mean exactly? This large group of people who say they're spiritual but not religious. Also, interestingly to note, the Pew Research Center asked of the spiritual but not religious people, are you looking for a church to join? And most of them said no. So why is that? Well, the people at the Pew Forum say that there are a couple of different reasons. First of all, that the sense of spirituality that the spiritual but not religious people claim is very diverse. And so some of those people have a form of spirituality that is very anti-institutional. And so, of course, they're not going to be looking for any kind of religious community to join. But others of them have this sense that spirituality is a very personal, private affair, like Wendy was talking about. And Jen Crow gave us a picture of what the solitary, personal, private, spiritual seeker looks like in the reading that Elaine shared with us earlier. She points to the research describing both a push and a pull in the United States society today, leading people to privatized spirituality. The push is the frantic experience of life that so many of us deal with. And I think we can relate to that. I mean, I've certainly had conversations with folks in the congregation who say, I just had to stay home from church because I needed a break. I needed to not go anywhere and just stay home. So I think a lot of us can relate to that sense that like life is just so frantic and so busy that we need some time for stillness and some time for quiet. So that's part of it, and it's a cultural experience that we share. The push part, the pull part, they say, is the idealization of the individual doing their own thing. So whatever the cause, the Pew researchers put this trend under the category of social disengagement. And it transcends participation in religious institutions. People who are active in religious institutions also tend to be people who are active in other places in the society, in cultural organizations and social organizations, as volunteers, in community groups. People who are active in religious communities tend to be more active in those other kinds of communities as well than people who are not religious and don't participate in any religious community. So I don't know whether one follows the other or if the trend reflects differing approaches to our social public lives, but it's clear that people who are spiritual but not religious, a large percentage of them have this sense that spirituality is private and something that you do alone. So that's one reason why some folks are not looking for religious community to join. And another reason is the political backlash many of them name. And this is particularly true of the folks who are under age 30. Many of them, a great many of them, were raised in very conservative religious institutions in the United States. And as they came of age, they started understanding their own political and social commitments and realized that they were not in alignment with the religious communities in which they grew up. So 2/3 of the people who say that they're spiritual but not religious when asked about their political identity say that they're either moderate or liberal. And they grew up in conservative religious traditions, sometimes really conservative religious traditions. And so, for example, many of them, especially the young people, say that they support things like marriage equality and reproductive choice, for example. But the churches that they grew up in not only are opposed to those things, are often intensely politically organized against those issues in our society. And so as a result, many of the young unaffiliated people in particular say that they believe that religion is judgmental, homophobic, hypocritical, and too political. So if you Google spiritual but not religious, you'll find an awful lot of writing on the subject, especially by religious people, trying to understand what is this demographic and what are they all about. So some religious people, religious leaders, have written at length about why the spiritual but not religious are missing the point. And some of that writing can be kind of snarky and critical and trying to sort of like persuade them that they just don't get it. other religious leaders are looking at the research about the spiritual but not religious people and trying to figure out if there's a way to invite them to take a fresh look at religion, to redefine, as Saul said, what religion might mean to them, and to consider maybe a form of religion that they never experienced. President Peter Morales of the Unitarian Universalist Association is one of those types of religious leaders. He's very interested in how Unitarian Universalists might communicate with the spiritual but not religious folks. And I've heard him give several lectures on this subject because he believes that many of the young people in particular who say that they're spiritual but not religious might just find a home in this progressive religious community. To that, I would add that there's a great deal of research suggesting that participation in social organizations, including religious institutions, is good for our health in a whole host of different ways, physically, mentally, spiritually. And so though it may seem like when our lives are too frantic, the best thing to do is just to stay home and have some stillness, some quiet time, maybe that is, but over the trajectory of months and years, the research tells us that participating in religious institutions is one of the best things that we can do for our health. I don't think that all the spiritual but not religious people are averse to participating in social organizations on principle, because after all, there's this huge industry catering to the spiritual but not religious. It's mostly in the forms of books. There's publishing houses that particularly look for authors who will speak to this demographic because it's a lot of people and they have spending power. But in addition to books, there's also this whole world of organizations that run things like retreats and workshops and pilgrimages directed at people who say that they're spiritual but not religious. And some of those opportunities are not inexpensive. So I don't think that it's about participating in social institutions as a matter of principle, or even social institutions that might be inviting people to make a contribution in support of what they find there. I think it's something else. Having grown up unaffiliated myself, I can relate to the skepticism that many people have of religious institutions. If you'd asked me when I was 16, I would have told you that religion is judgmental and hypocritical. From my limited glimpses into religious community, I found little that in religious community that I thought was compelling. So when I stumbled upon Unitarian Universalism, I had to reconsider my assumptions because they were all shaken. I didn't know that religion could be like this. And that's a common enough story even still. So maybe Peter Morales is right. Maybe we are poised to become a home for people who say that they're spiritual but not religious, or at least some of them. But that will never happen if they've never heard of Unitarian Universalism. And so my question for you is, when was the last time you told someone what this religious tradition is all about? Our hymn of affirmation is number 145. It's the hymn that was written for the General Assembly in which the Unitarians joined the Unitarian Universalists. So the Unitarians joined the Universalists to make Unitarian Universalism. So this is a hymn specifically in support of our religious tradition. Please rise in body or spirit.
By the Reverend Patrick T. O'Neill, what we love, we empower. What we love, we empower. We can't claim to love justice as long as we are willing to tolerate oppression or racism. We can't claim to love peace unless somehow, in some way, we are seeking to make peace a reality in the world and in our personal lives. We work for what we love. We invest in what we love. We try to become worthy of what we love and of the people we love. We give of our time, our energies, our attention, and our resources so that love might thrive. This principle applies to our church as well. Becoming a member is also about empowerment, though we don't always think of it that way. By joining a church, we declare that what the church stands for, the principles it teaches, the work it engages, the community it strives to become, are all things we hold close in our hearts. By being members, we commit to empower this little institution. And we have a right to expect that the church will empower us in return. It will call us to higher ground, to greater love, greater compassion, greater caring for the world and its troubles, for those suffering and their pains, for the deprived and their needs. It will empower us by calling us to live out our ideals and our principles in everyday life, in everyday relationships. It will empower our children too, if we have them. It will teach them tolerance and respect for the good and the holy. It will teach them self-love and love for others. It will provide safety and encouragement and community in times of celebration and loss. This is our great covenant and compact as members of the church. This is what we are here to do and to be for one another. By what we do here, by what we contribute each in our own way here, by the people we become here, by the ideals and the visions we embrace and follow, by the families that we help to shape here in this church, we increase the store of love and justice in this world.
I have a friend who is someone who might use that phrase, spiritual but not religious, to describe himself. And he's kind of curious about Unitarian Universalism. He's looked us up online and listened to a few sermons. He's gone to a couple worship services and sort of generally feels like, yeah, maybe this could be a fit. He likes the doctrinal freedom for each person to name their own truth. He's drawn to the spiritual practices that we teach in many of our religious congregations. As a parent, he's very appreciative of our comprehensive religious education program, which guides children in studying not only what does it mean to be a Unitarian Universalist, but also what are the other religious traditions in the world and what are the foundations of creating a moral compass in addition to comprehensive spirituality education and all the things that we offer, our sexuality education in our religious education program. So he's drawn to Unitarian Universalism, but unlike some of the spiritual but not religious people who are looking perhaps or might be interested in a progressive religious community, what he would really like is a religious community that's apolitical. Because he objects to the conservative religious traditions that spend so much time and money and effort in putting their voices out into the public square and trying to influence public policy, he would like a religious tradition, even if it's progressive, that doesn't do that, that just stays out of the public square and focuses on community and spirituality. And so he wonders, why can't we just be that? Why do we have to be out there advocating, even though it's for a progressive position? So I've been thinking about that for a couple of years. And I've come to the conclusion that it wouldn't be possible for us to be apolitical, that if we chose to do that, it would be a radical break with who we have been as religious communities. The Unitarians and the Universalists before us were constantly putting their voices out there in the public square. From the very beginnings, in the 1700s and the 1800s, they were out there. They were advocating for the abolition of slavery. They were advocating for equal rights for women, for education for all people, for temperance. They had a particular vision about what a just society looks like. And they believed that they were called by God to be out there speaking to people about this vision of what does a just society look like. And so that's our heritage, and we continue to do that. We have a vision of what a just society looks like. And so we're out there in the public square these days, advocating for marriage equality, advocating for reproductive justice, advocating for immigration justice, for environmental justice, for gun control. There's a whole host of things that were out there, Unitarian Universalists in the public square saying, this is our vision of what a just society looks like. And I think that the reason that we do that is because of what Patrick O'Neill was saying in that reading that Elaine just shared. What we love, we empower. And we love this world, and we have a vision of what justice and peace looks like, and we love justice and peace. And so therefore, we are compelled to go out and speak to people about this vision of what does a just society look like? What does a peaceful society look like? And how can we together live into that vision? And so we are necessarily political. This religious tradition is not simply about private spirituality. And that gets really complicated because we don't all agree on the vision of what a just and peaceful society looks like. But we've never all agreed on what the vision of a just and peaceful society looks like. That's another part of our history. It's in our DNA. So while there, we love to tell the stories about Unitarians and Universalists who are out there advocating for equal rights for women and the abolition of slavery. The truth is, there were Unitarians and Universalists who were on the other side. There were Unitarians and Universalists who believed in the institution of slavery, who held people enslaved, who were absolutely opposed to abolition. There were Unitarians and Universalists who weren't quite sure that women should have the right to vote. And so they didn't all agree with each other. But part of what's in our DNA is this sense that we are called to speak not just to an individual's fulfillment, not just to a wholeness for an individual, but to wholeness for the society at large. And so we wrestle together, and that's in our history. We wrestle together, and we sit in meetings, and we have long conversations, and we figure out what the consensus is, where the majority lies. And then we say, it's okay for you to go out there and advocate for that issue, even though not everybody agrees. And we agree to stay in community with each other. And we trace that back, actually, to our European history. In Transylvania, there was a man, Francis David, and we attribute the quote to him that we like to say so often, we do not need to think alike, to love alike. We're here because we love life, we love this world, and we want to grow in wholeness. And we don't all agree what that looks like, but we stay connected, seeking after love. When we do these things out in the public square, we're speaking of our principles. We're speaking of the worth and dignity of every person. And also in recent years, we're speaking about the interconnected web of existence that we're all a part of. More and more, we understand that our dignity is collective, that I can't just speak of my worth and dignity or of your worth and dignity, but really I have to speak of our worth and dignity. It diminishes us all when there are people sleeping on the streets. It diminishes us all when there are children whose lives have been shattered by war. It diminishes us all. It diminishes all of our dignity. It's collective. Our liberation is bound up with one another's. Our spiritual, physical, and mental health is bound up with one another's. And so the lines between public and private are very, very blurry, if they even exist at all. Our flourishing is interconnected. Part of the power of church and the way we practice it is the opportunity that we have to worship and work with people who don't see exactly as we do, because this is a critical skill for living in our society today, learning to stay in relationship with people that we disagree with. In the way that we do church, we have the opportunity to be upfront and personal with many different models of what does it mean to live an integrated life, many different visions of what does it mean to have faith put into action. To be a Unitarian Universalist is to put our faith into action. In Unitarian Universalism, you get to decide where you put your faith. Among us are people who put their faith in God and others who put their faith in science. We have people whose faith rests with the power of beloved community and others whose faith lies in the power of the cosmos to create and sustain life. We differ in the foundations of our faith, but what we share in common is the commitment to live our lives in alignment with our faith and with the values that we name as most important. And we help one another in that journey, both with the naming and with the living out of our values. That's what church is all about here. It's the place where we get to explore, test, practice, challenge, grow, and support one another in aligning our lives with our values. And that's not something that we can just do one time, but something that has to happen again and again and again as we're growing and changing and our lives are changing. And we're always seeking again balance, seeking again alignment between the way that we live our lives and what we most deeply believe. So that's necessarily public, necessarily political. In the time that I've been a member of this congregation, I have grown through my relationship with you. I've lived with you through divorces and deaths, and I've seen the way that you take care of each other. I lived with you through weddings and births and adoptions, and I've seen the way that you celebrate with each other. I've lived with you through conflict and seen the way that you stay at the table and work it out. And I've lived with you through play to see the ways that you manifest joy in your life. I lived with you through hard work, working side by side, each of us doing our part. I lived with you through the ordinary days with their little victories and disappointments. I've seen the way that you build community and the way that you work to sustain it and the ways that you try to welcome new people in. I've known you long enough to get to know you, and this is what I see. I see a church, this church, these people, a loving and faithful expression of Unitarian Universalism. We're not perfect, of course. We have room to grow. But what we have here is something special and beautiful. It has the power to bless, and there are lots of people out there who are looking for a blessing. So don't be shy. Let someone know what this religious tradition is all about. Who knows, maybe you'll find yourself in conversation with someone who didn't know that church could be like this. So tell a friend or a family member or a neighbor, and then if you're someone who calls this place home, speak to someone on the building expansion team or the capital campaign team and tell them how you'd like to work to expand our space or how that you'd like to work to help raise the money for us to expand our space so that we can make more room here for the people who want to join us. We empower what we love. So let us empower this church and let it empower us in return. Amen and blessed be. If you're willing, I invite you to take a hand of someone near you. Touch an arm, shoulder. Go out into the world this day, this week, finding your own way to help contribute to a vision of a peace and just world. And then remember that the hand you hold now represents this community. And this is a place that you can keep returning again and again. And we'll be people you can lean on. Go in peace.